adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Hello, it is Wednesday nights. You know what that means. A hard cut by Ryan on the music. It is me, Ryan, joined as always by my co-host, Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Doing right, how are you, man?
Not too bad, you know.
Yeah,
feeling better? Just living life. What'd you say?
Are you feeling better?
Mostly. Not 100%. I'm 4 weeks in. I'm literally in the middle of the fourth week, and I am still feeling it.
Oh.
I was sick for all of February. You got to enjoy that. And it was the flu. I found out from the people I caught it from, it was the flu. So, we got people in the chat. We got Lord Kev, Taylor Cannon. Hey, Taylor. Scott George, who was not happy with tonight. And then Mike Pearson. Haven't seen that name in a while. I don't know what happened to that guy. He became too cool for school.
Very smart man.
He became too cool for school. So yeah, anything new with you? Oh, Pieces is here, but he's buzzed on sake.
Nice. Cheers. Nothing really much, I don't think, since the last time we spoke. Nothing crazy. How about you?
Not much, honestly. Living life. Mike said he had a lot going on with work. I'll forgive you, Mike. I'm a nice guy.
Are you?
I am. So, any news this week in the wrestling world?
Well, maybe AEW and Jason with the whole Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount. And Paramount acquiring HBO Max.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That went this week. Oh, Pieces is asking Kate's not on Fightful. What's her excuse this time? She is traveling, as far as I'm aware. So she has a valid excuse. She's not too cool for school today. But maybe she is too cool for school. We don't know.
Too cool for us.
Yeah, too cool for us, that's for sure. I'm just saying too cool for school tonight. I don't know why. It's stuck on me. So Paramount is now officially getting Warner, WBD, which it was supposed to be Netflix, but now it's Paramount. I don't know what this means for wrestling. The fear with Netflix, I think, was that if there was an exclusivity clause with WWE would it impact. I don't see how that would have worked. Paramount obviously has so much more going on and they don't have anything wrestling related, so I don't think they have an exclusivity clause. The interesting thing there is that Paramount's carrying the UFC, and UFC is owned by the same company that owns WWE, so there is a little bit of overlap there. Not that it matters. I said before, I never understood why people thought even if Netflix bought them, they wouldn't want AEW. I would want all of it. Get the pie instead of just getting slices of it. That's been my, my opinion. I don't know if you have any other thoughts.
No, I'm fine with it. First of all, for myself, I have Paramount, so I'm all good there. I didn't have HBO Max, so I don't think it'll be that much difference. I think everything will kind of transfer over.
Yeah, and how long this is going to take? These things don't take. These things aren't quick. I think when I saw Sean Rossap point out, by the time this thing is fully transitioned over. AEW's in the last year of their contract anyway. So, like, you know, and they'll get other contracts based on just what they're producing in TV and the way TV works now. I don't see that being the end of them. So Peace is agreeing with us, doesn't see why it would cause any major problems. I mean, it's relevant to AEW, it's important, but in terms of business, I don't see what it would cause. I don't know enough about the business though to go in and be like, this is the definitive what you're gonna have happen. I never understood from any level why whoever bought WBD would suddenly say, AEW, you're gone. It's like they have value and like, again, even if you had wrestling, there's a reason ESPN wanted all the sports when it could get all the sports before they started getting outbid. The more of your category that you have, the better off you are. There was another minor piece of AEW adjacent related news that we'll talk about, and only because former AEW star Danhausen debuted at Elimination Chamber for WWE to a very mixed to less than enthusiastic entrance crowd, but his Monday night was much better. I don't think they set him up for a success with coming out of the box at Elimination Chamber. I don't think that would have worked for him. Anyone, part of the problem is people thought it was Jericho. They thought it was like someone known. And then that would have been better as a one night gag. Hey, this box arrived tonight. What is it? Pull it out on Raw. Boom, it's a coffin. He comes out with his dancers. That would have worked in one night. I think dragging it out made people think it was someone else, someone with a little bit more star power. I love Danhausen, so I'm not criticizing. His use on Monday was perfect. I don't know if you saw it, Joe. I mean, he came in with his list of demand housings, including a blimp, and then he cursed Dominic, who lost, which is the perfect way to use a curse, make the curse real. So it looks like if they use him like that, because I don't think he's going to wrestle a ton. I think he'll basically be like just a character. If they continue to use him like that, he'll be perfect. I thought he was going to go to NXT, which was tailor-made for him, but if they're willing to just have him do backstage vignettes and mess with people, maybe team, like, kind of do what the conglomeration did with him. I think it was Best Friends at the time, but what the Best Friends did with him, which is kind of give him a group, I think he'll nail it. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I think people who thought it wasn't going to be Danhausen, I think kind of worked themselves up into a shoot of thinking it was going to be someone else. But it was a weird debut, having him come out and not talk. And, you know, there's a good portion of that crowd that probably didn't know who he was, even though people thought they wouldn't know who he was. I think there's a strong divide among some WWE audience and AEW audience where they don't know who he was. I liked what they did on Monday night for the follow-up. I think they should have probably done a vignette ahead of his appearance, like earlier on Monday Night Raw, maybe do a background vignette or something with him to give people a little bit more background of who he is and what he's about. But otherwise, yeah, I thought his comedy kind of worked well. He's going to be the R-Truth of WWE. I think he can flow down to CMLL, to NXT, to SmackDown, to Raw. I think, you know, there's a place for him.
I think he's even, and this isn't, actually, I'm going to rephrase this because I think he's even better than R-Truth, because he's not. I mean, that's not to say R-Truth has such a long history that I don't want to downplay what R-Truth was. I think in terms of right now, more importantly, in terms of merch, I think he will be better than what R-Truth ever was. Danhausen is a merch mover. He just is. His shirts look cool. If they let him have a say on what everything looks like, and they just don't have outside designers trying to imagine what Danhausen should be, he will move a ton of merch for them, which I think is the one area where I could be wrong, but I think that would have been R-Truth's weakness. I don't think his merch was ever the best, but I think his merch is going to kill.
Look at how well his Danhausen shirt had done. It was with the top seller, and no, it was designed by one of his friends, someone he's worked with for a long time. So, yeah, I think you don't you don't reinvent the wheel. You let Dan Housen be the marketing genius that he is.
Exactly. And I don't want to steal this from so Sour Grapes Alex, who's Kate's other co-host at other shows, did have a good point that he's going to be loved by kids. And WWE is a very kid-heavy audience. So it's even better for him to like, I loved Danhausen in AEW. I think when they used him properly. So I don't ever want to say they didn't know what they were doing with him. I just don't understand why they stopped using him or didn't use him in ROH. But in so many ways, he is tailor-made for WWE. The audience they have, their style. He's entertainment more than he's wrestling, I guess is the best way to say it.
I mean, he's already had more TV time than Royce Keys, right?
Well, not if you count replaying the same podcast appearance over and over and over and over. Now Peterson thinking that Tony benched him because of Punk. I didn't read any of that. I mean, that's obviously he loved him and Punk were friends because he was a huge Punk fan. But they brought him back for that one off and then he went away again. Like I never understood what happened there. But they were doing some vignettes for him even after Punk left and then they stopped. I don't know. It was weird, but I'm just glad he's back on my TV because I am a big Danhausen guy. So I won't sit here and pretend like I'm not and that I'm not my biggest fear. Well, I did find a Danhausen shirt on WWE and it is
fine. It's the top sellers.
So he's gonna, like I said, he's gonna be a hit merch wise and with kids. Will he be I'm blanking on some words here. Will he ever be heavyweight champion? No. I guess I'll say it that way. But he doesn't need to be. He will have a successful, you know, that he's awesome. I mean, I'm not gonna
he needs to be like a 24/7 champion or a speed champion.
Well, that was one thing Alex, Sour Grapes Alex said. He's like, Alex Plasky said, he should bring back the 24/7 championship. He should find it in like a trash can or something. And I'm like, yes, that would be, there's no better person for it. If they just let him be him, it'll be a hit. The where it would fail is if they try to, if someone writing tries to tell Danhausen who Danhausen is, like they're never going to understand the character better than he understands the character. So if you brought him in to be that character, let him play that piece. Is good point. He could be a success for WWE and never actually wrestle a match. I agree. I think, like I said, put him as part of a group. I don't know which group he'd be part of right now. I don't think anyone really fits, but I'm sure they could create one, but put him as part of a group and let him just be like a mouthpiece. And he's kind of like he was with Best Friends, where he would just say random things and then he'd have a match here or there, but that wasn't his bag, baby, as Mike Myers would say, or Austin Powers, if I want to be.
Any other AEW news?
I don't think so.
I'm going to use the chat. Help us out here. Is there anything else we're missing? Wow, Ron.
I don't think there is. Peterson says have him run around with the Wyatts. I think they're too serious about their creepy gimmick to work. He's too silly about his creepy gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start there. We're going to get into the show and we'll start with what they're saying in the chat. But first I want to shout out, we are part of the Shining Wizards Network. Shining Wizards have been on air for 17 years now. They've been doing this a very, 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 very long time. They're releasing old interviews, which are really cool interviews with people who are champions in AEW, champions here in WWE. Go listen to them, go watch. They're awesome. They have also a bunch of other great shows on the Shining Wizards Network, which you should check out. Please be a fan. Now, we're going to start with AEW. Scott George, real quick. Scott George wants Danhausen with R-Truth. I don't think we can handle that. I agree. That'd be fun. They need to have an interaction, but I think, well, you know what? Let's try it. Let's just see where that goes. But I'm going to skip our opener because everyone said, well, what's some AEW news? And the news they had involved the War Dogs, Clark Connors and Gabe Kidd versus Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy. They had a match tonight. And it was a nice back and forth match. I thought Clark Connors got hurt out at one point, but then I was glad to see him up and running because he threw Orange Cassidy into the guardrail and then he was like holding his ankle. I'm like, that didn't look to be part of a spot, but maybe he was selling something I didn't see. It was a nice back and forth match. Obviously, Clark Connors and Gabe Kidd are just world class workers. But Darby Allin and Orange Cassidy won by pinfall with an orange punch from Cassidy to Clark Connors, because obviously Clark Connors was going to take the pin. The story of the match was Clark Connors and Gabe Kidd are the better, I don't want to say better, the more ferocious fighters. They're the brutalizers. They beat them down, but you just can't beat Allin and Cassidy down enough to win. That those guys continue to come back again and again and again, which has been the stories of their career. And I like that. That's fine with them, especially with the build of those two guys. You're never going to be convinced that those two guys are going to come out and be able to dominate. So it works that they're just unable to lose. After the match is what the breaking news of the whole story, which is Dave Finley arrived and helped the War Dogs beat the hell out of Orange and Darby. And then afterwards, we find out that the War Dogs, all three of them, are now all elite. We knew Gabe Kidd had some kind of a contract. We had heard Clark Connors was signed, and now Dave Finley is. We don't know if they have some... I don't know if Sean posted it on Fightful Select, so if he did, I haven't read it yet. I don't know if they're on some like special... let me see. Hold on, I'm looking at it. I don't know if they're on a special hybrid deal. Doesn't look like it right now, but...
They were talking about some wines and worse in New Japan, so...
Yeah. I mean, I was at the New Japan show on Friday with Kate. She brought me, and I was very kind of her to go. And Finley won his match, and then he takes the mic, like he's going to say, like people are saying, thank you, Finley, and he drops it. So there was a lot of like, oh, maybe it's not, he's not going to... No, he's not going to come over. But sure enough, he came over. Yeah, they got the graphic, but just because you get the graphic doesn't necessarily mean you're not on one of those split deals they sometimes offer, like they've done with Persephone and stuff, where they've... I think Kevin Knight was on one of those. If he might not still, he might still be on one where they like, you get so many days with New Japan, you get so many days with AEW. But yeah, I mean, the War Dogs are they're a lot of fun. We can talk about, I have very big opinions on the trios division that I want to get into, but they are another trio, but they're also all singles guys at the same point. Well, no, Clark Connors pretty much primarily acted as a tag, but Gabe Kidd and Finley, big time singles guys. What did you think of the match? What did you think of the debut?
I thought we get this match at Revolution, but with Finley coming out at the end, I guess that makes sense why we'll probably run it back. I'm okay with the outcome, even though I'm a fan of usually more of the established tag teams winning. I think we both are usually. And, you know, War Dogs are the established team, where Orange Cassidy and Darby really aren't. They just happen to be very similar in the ways you mentioned about being able to take a lot of punishment and keep coming back. What this means going forward as far as three against two, Darby and Orange are going to have a third to combat the War Dogs, or I guess they're just called the Dogs now. So maybe this is where we see Roddy come back.
And in what role do you think Roddy comes back?
to be the third, to help OC and Darby against them.
Okay, so he's the third. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if, like...
They have to find a third somewhere.
No, they absolutely do. I just didn't know if, you know, if you had it, him betraying...
I did initially until Finley made it official to come back, and now it doesn't make sense for him to go that way.
Yeah, that's fair. That'd be weird to betray when you just brought in these three guys. Yeah, no.
And I'm with Chad. Give these full the trio belts.
We're gonna have a big trios discussion in a second because I have a big issue with that. Chad is basically saying, Chad is more focusing on the contract, saying, yeah, they should be able to work both. And I've never doubted they would be able to work both because I saw multiple AEW guys at New Japan on Friday. I mean, Ricochet, Andrade, Athena. But I'm just saying there was also a split contract at some point, which is a little bit more official and detailed than just saying, hey, they can go work these other places. You know, I don't. We're gonna hold the Trios Championship talk because I to get there we have to go back and whatnot and it becomes ugly. So I'll go back to the beginning of the show. That was. There's. I have very. I have very angry thoughts. But we did start the show with a hello, man. All right, you know what? Fine. The main event was the Don Callis family, which featured in this iteration, Okada, Fletcher, and Mark Davis versus Jet Speed Rodeo, Adam Page, Kevin Knight, and Speedball for the Trios Championship. This was made earlier in the night when Hangman won a squash match. And then Callis came out and said, like, all three of you are going after singles titles. You know, Hangman, you're going after the world. I think, was it Knight going after the... Knight was going after Okada and Speedball was going after Fletcher, or was it reversed? I can't remember which way it was, but... So, you know what? We're going to come after your belts. We're going for the trios. So, they go and they have this match, and it is a great match. No doubt... a really fun trios match, typical of what you would expect of people at this talent level. I mean, truthfully, Fletcher and Mark Davis, they were Aussie Open, so you have like established tag teams that had a good feel for each other. I mean, this was world class, but the match ends because MJF knocks out Hangman, and that leaves Okada to hit the Remaker on Kevin Knight, which I still believe Kevin Knight is going to be abandoning Jet Speed at some point soon. He's just too much singles focus for him. That usually means the guy's gonna leave a tag team. But so now your tag champions are Mark Davis, Okada, and Kyle Fletcher. Now, my problem with the tag belts previously was that they were not being focused on. And that's when none of the champs actually had another belt. Now, Hangman was focusing on a second belt, but the other two, that was their only thing. You've now given the belts, the trios belts, to guys with other championships, which is my least favorite thing in the world. And two of them. So of the three guys with trios belts, two of them have their own titles. At what point are they going to focus on these trios championships? Not to mention the Don Callis family has enough people in there that you could have put Josh Alexander, Mark Davis, and I don't know who the third would. I was trying to think of who to put in the third. They have the talent. They're clearly telling a different story with Andrade, so it couldn't have been him. But you had enough. I'm going through it. Let me figure Archer. Out who I would have put. Could put Archer. If Lance Archer, you have. I mean, Hechicero could have done it. He had a match earlier against Moxley. But just don't put him in that match and have him compete for the trios. He's good enough. No one would have doubted it. You have
El Clone.
You have, I think it's Trent. You have guys in there that could have won this, and you could have put in still have them win because MJF knocks out Hangman with his ring. So it would have still given you the same end, except now the three guys in the Callis family that have the belts, that's all they have to focus on. So their entire story could be focusing on those truce belts. And that would have given someone like Josh Alexander a belt, which would have been really cool because he deserves one. So like you would have had a trio that would have only focused on the trio's belts, which then now you have some other trios in the companies. You have the Rascals, who for some reason have only been wrestling in tag matches. Now you have the Dogs, who they're not focusing on trios, but you have other trios in the company, and now you had a trio with belts with only those belts. But instead, they give the trio to the guys in the family who already have singles, which basically means they're not going to focus on the trios at all. What is the point?
Yeah, it felt weird because Jet Set Rodeo being trio champions, they were transitional champions to begin with, right? They were used to help get the belts off of the ops because Joe was banged up and Hobbs is leaving. I don't know why they think that you have to put the titles onto people who have titles already. And even tonight, with Callis' promo, I mean, he's leaning into the fact and making fun at it, talking about how, you know, people with titles want more titles. And yet we do it. It makes no sense. Like I said, the Dogs are there. They could have came in and had a debut and took the belts off them quickly. You could have found a way for another trio to get the belts off of them. And I don't see them. I don't see Okada dropping his championship anytime soon. I don't see Fletcher losing his title anytime soon. So they're just gonna walk around with two belts for a while again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking through. They could have easily given the Callis family with their three belts and had them win because that was the easiest story to feed into. And then you have the Dogs to be the first feud. You could have had the Rascals be a feud. You have. Well, the ops are hurt, but if they're healthy, they can come back and be a feud. And once again, it frees up your tag division a little bit because you can rotate in some guys who are just tag teams. And it frees up your singles because you're not overlapping people. You're able to use a bunch more wrestlers, but not overlap them.
You know, one way I could have almost been okay with it is if they would have almost inserted Takeshita in it. They had Okada, Fletcher, and Takeshita be the trio champions. And then have Takeshita get distracted by the Death Bears or something and cost them the championships, which then further along that storyline of Okada trying to, you know, sway Fletcher away from Takeshita. I could have saw that work better, but I don't get what they're doing with Okada Open or whatever you want to call this trio.
Yeah, I... You have enough trios in the company now that you could have a legitimate trios division where you should at least have a feud around the trios title that is separate of everything else and no one else is holding a title, and it should only be for the feud title. You could honestly even have a secondary feud. Not necessary, but you could. And again, it would also free up your tag division because right now you have like, okay, you have Private Party and you have Gates of Agony and you have the Rascals and you have, and it's like, well, Private Party is only a tag team. So let them focus on the tag team. The Rascals go for the trios. Gates of Agony, they technically could be a trio, but because Ricochet has a title, let them be a tag team. Like, it allows you to separate people out and let them be, let the divisions be a little bit more organized. And again, use more people. I don't know. I feel like...
It would be one thing to do it here and there, but I feel like AEW has done this way too often.
The biggest way to not have your belt matter is by having the guys who hold it hold singles titles. Because they're always going to focus on the singles titles before they focus on their trios or their tag. That's the problem I have with the women's tag division. That's the problem I now have with the trios. Like, let your champions only hold them and let them feud there. And again, it just lets you, and I know maybe Tony doesn't want to use more wrestlers. Clearly he doesn't. But to me, it's like, you sign this huge roster, this is a way to utilize them all. You have a tag division, boom, you got four guys in a match. So if you have two tag feuds going on at all times, you're using eight, and you can have them wrestle just other tag teams randomly just to give them wins. If you have at least one trios feud going on at all times, you have six right there. Boom, you're using a bunch more than just outside your singles. I don't know. I don't understand it. And Peace is asking, is the Dark Order still around? They're in ROH. I don't think they're doing much. LaRon did not love the show tonight. LaRon's not alone. I don't think this was one of their best. They've been on a heater, and I think this was a bit of a
cool down. On paper, I thought it looked like a good show heading into tonight, and then it just felt, one, way too long. I felt like they tried to cram way too much into 2+ hours. And then, secondly, to the point we're talking about now, just some of the directions they went with.
Yeah, like, I left with a sour taste in my mouth, a bad taste in my mouth with the way the trios is booked. I don't want guys, you now have trio champs that have two other singles champions in there. And I, in a group that has so many people where you could, and legitimate stars, like Josh Alexander wouldn't look out of place holding a belt. You know, the third was a little tougher, but making Hashisero El Clone would have been fun. Making Lance Archer, no one would have said anything about that.
Because, like, I feel like they treat the trio titles kind of like mid-card titles already, right?
Which is fine. But you have trios. Like, yeah. It's not... I would... And there's a lot of people who would hate me for this. I would, I'm liking on the words I was about to say. God, where'd my brain go? I hate myself right now. I had words and they're completely gone. And that is pathetic. Ugh, I knew, you ever do that? Where, like, you literally had a full thought processed in your brain, and by the time you went to say it, it was gone.
I'm sure I have.
Oh my God. Hold on. Give me 1 second.
Let's see if Ryan can find words.
Well, let's see if I can find out why are people going to hate me for this. They do a tournament. You do a tournament, a trios tournament, and you put in the Rascals, and you put in the Dogs, and you put in, the Demand has a single set, but you have a couple trios you could throw in, even if a couple of them are just throwaways, but you have a couple big ones in there, and you let them compete for the goddamn, and you give it to a trio that's a trio that's all they have. Yeah. That's my solution. Yeah. I know people are going to hate me because a lot of people are sick of tournaments, but except for pieces, apparently. But I think that would be the best way. And it would give you a refresh in the trios division where you could get used to some of the teams. You know, like...
When was the last time that you really liked the trios division? Like, when you thought...
I haven't. They had better trios rivalries before. They had better trios rivalries before they had the trios titles. It's like, as soon as they got them,
the House in Black, what about their title reign?
Yes, that was fun. That was fun. But for a lot of it, it felt like as soon as they got the titles, that was... I don't know. I'm looking at the roster to see who else... You could throw some trios together and have them compete, and it would be fun, but it's just... I don't know. They just don't. They refuse to give the trios a proper division, and it's infuriating. And it's a waste of the belts that could be a lot of fun. You have Los Faction and Canobles. They're mostly in ROH, but bring them up. Who fucking cares? I know they're tag team champions in ROH, but that's ROH.
I mean, you can turn into a tournament and they can still lose. That's fine.
Yeah. You have, again, you have the Rascals, you have the Dogs, you have the Demands. You could throw them in, they can lose.
Conglomeration.
The Conglomeration could call, hello, 1LT. Yeah, you have enough that you could throw together and you could make it fun. You know, unfortunately, injuries also hurt some, like the Bang Bang Gang, so beat up that they would be one. They can't right now. There's stuff like that, but that's the route I would go. I would do a trios tournament to finally reform these belts that have just been terrible. That's my humblest of humble opinions.
I don't think you're alone.
No, but we did start out the night. Kevin Knight did double duty tonight. Kevin Knight tonight did double duty because he started out the night wrestling MJF for the men's women's championship. No, sorry, men's world championship. Wow, told you 4 weeks of being sick, it's getting to me. This was a hell of a match. It felt like it was weird. It did feel like Kevin Knight was being portrayed as like the plucky young upstart versus the experienced Max, even though Max was, they're probably around the same age, but like Max being the champion gets to play that. Obviously Max is dirty and at one point, because of a ref spot, it looked like Kevin Knight should have won. He had him down for like 7 seconds, but the ref was on the ground. I always argue though that at those spots, if I don't hear the ref counting, why am I gonna lift my shoulders up? I'll just stay relaxing. You know, there's no reason to hold on. This whole chat has to stop because I just saw this. Someone has 300 plus sneakers.
I do.
Jesus Christ! You don't have 300. You don't have 300 feet.
No, but I have 2 feet. And I can wear 300 days a year. No, I don't want to do
that a year. Fair enough. We got to get you 65 more. You have to wear a different pair each day.
I'll work on that.
But so MJF ended up winning with the Heat Seeker. He was going to beat up Knight after the match, but Hangman made the save. And then Speedball got behind MJF and beat him up. So that was fun. Again, this was a lot of fun. It kind of gets a little bit of a dark cloud over it because of the fact that Kevin Knight then had to go wrestle in the main event, in which MJF cost them the Trios title for, and how much I hated that for all the reasons we just discussed. But yeah, Kevin Knight is, he's clearly being positioned as a singles wrestler. And that to me means he's going to be breaking away from Jet Speed soon. I could be wrong, but that's when I see a guy getting promo time, championship matches. He took the pin in the main event, which says something to me because it means like he's going to be pissed off about that. I think not only is he going to go singles, I think he's going to go heel. I think this is going to be a heel turn. He's going to turn on Speedball. What do you think of the match? What do you think of my idea?
I can see Kevin Knight eventually going heel just because they built him up that way. Everyone keeps talking about his potential. When he had that massive Swerve kind of little brothers him, right? But I think that's going to eventually get him, and he'll feel like Speedball has been dragging him down. It's a tale as old as time. But the match itself, I thought, was fun. It's always good to see Max wrestle more on TV. I feel like he's had more matches on Dynamite in the last month and a half, and he has maybe all last year. It makes sense that Kevin got this match to me, because I wonder why they kept building him up for the past month or so. And for him to have a world title shot, I think it made sense. And MJF, you know, he played the role of veteran here, and, you know, being crafty and taking shortcuts, because, you know, he has a couple of years on Kevin Knight as a pro wrestler. So he's been doing it maybe for a little bit longer. So yeah, it doesn't hurt him with a loss. So I think that now that he has the trio belt off of him, it's a perfect time to get away.
Yeah. One LT thinks that Kevin Knight is going to join Swerve. I can't disagree because Swerve was doing a little bit of recruiting a couple weeks back. So it would make sense. I mean, with the embassy clearly being mentioned a few times and Swerve going full heel, I'd see him grabbing a group. He's been on his own.
Who would be the heater? Who would be the big guy? You have to have a big guy.
Nana.
The big guy? Like the big,
Yeah,
powerful,
he's the
strong
heater,
dude?
man. You don't fuck with Prince Nana. Honestly, I don't know. I don't know if there's a heater out there for them to grab. They could try to grab the hell is their name? Hold on. They could try to grab, was it Big Bill and Bounty Hunter Keith and put them as part of it, because Big Bill's a big boy.
Yeah, it's big. It's his name.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't
Jesse's
know.
on your side, right, Jesse?
Oh, Kate's not here, so hi, Jesse. So yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of, again, we gotta get the roster up, so I'm going down, and there's no one that would fit the heater thing aside from Big Bill, because he's got that, like, he's big and he's kind of could be that good heel persona. Everyone else is, Don Callis has got all the big guys, and then there's no one else that's like big,
Yeah,
big, 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 big.
if only there was a powerhouse around.
Yeah, or Keith Lee. Yeah, I don't see anyone else. I
Yeah,
would think it
anyway,
would be, they're
I
not.
do think we see a faction form here in the next couple of weeks, and maybe even that revolution.
Yeah, the embassy's been coming up too much for me to not think that's gonna be a thing. They'll never do it, but the coolest thing they could do is just bring up Shane Taylor Promotions.
I
And
thought
just
about that.
the whole group is part of the embassy. That would be awesome. They're never gonna do that, but that would be cool.
I mean, the embassy had merged into their faction before.
Yeah. So that was that. So then, oh, we already talked about the War Dogs match. We had pieces with Satnam Singh as the biggest heater. Listen, if they brought out Satnam Singh as the heater, you couldn't kill that story quick enough. He's a big boy. I've seen him in person, and he is a big, 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 big man. But unfortunately, he has the big man issue of, like, they just struggle. I think that's what makes people like Paul White and Big Bill, or Kevin Nash back in his day and stuff, like certain guys, what makes them so unique and special is that once you get to a certain height, it becomes very difficult for them to work at a certain level because their body just doesn't want to do it. And I know a lot of the, and that's what even makes them special in like basketball, where you see big guys, because at a certain height, your body's just like, what are we doing? We're too big for this.
Shaq in
Yeah.
early rookie years is amazing.
His body transformation is hilarious. He was jacked like a mother and then just got, and listen, I'm a big boy, so I'll say this to my fellow big boy, but he just got big. But the NBA back then allowed it to be because he could just put all his weight on someone and back them down. I wonder what would happen now. Would he get called for fouls?
Probably.
He might, because he's a, like I said, he's a big guy. And I don't know if they'd let that stand. But back to wrestling, we go to what ends up being a surprising squash match, which is the Brawling Birds, Windsor and Hayter versus the Inspiration, Cassie Lee and Jesse McKay. This is the Inspiration's debut, and I think they did them a little dirty. If you want my honest God opinion, there was no vignettes. There was nothing beforehand. I would have hyped them up a little. They come out to very little reaction. In fairness, I don't think people knew who they were. Not that they don't. I think they knew who they were once they saw them enough and remembered. But I think like that was new music. You're like, if you hadn't been watching TNA, you wouldn't know what they were doing. They came out, they wanted to get their music going again, and then the Brawling Birds didn't allow that. They hit them from behind, and they beat them pretty quickly. Now, here's my thing. This was a squash. Now, the Inspiration, I'm not expecting them to come and be the dominant team in the division, but they were TNA Women's Tag Champs, Whip Knockouts Tag Champs. They have a history. You would think they would have a little bit more behind them. The only thing is they are funny as all hell. And there is a story where they got hit from behind. So they got jumped and then they lost. They could turn this into a catapult of defining their characters. Of like they respond to it really funny. They do a whole thing. I can see it being part of it. They could make it work if they want to. They could also not. I mean, I mean AEW. They could also not make it work. They could just let it be and that's the end of it. But I don't think you bring them in just to be a squash team. I think this is part of like, yes, you gave the Brawling Birds their big win because they're trying to establish them. And then you let them make a story out of it, a show. I mean, because if you want to know who they're like, just look at the person, and that was one LT's getting to before I can, who sung their intro, which is Harley Cameron. They are comedy. Harley Cameron took some beatings and then became a thing. It's a very possible thing to do. Scott George calling a full-on burial. The only reason I don't think it's a full-on burial is because they just signed them. If you don't want them, you don't sign them. I don't see Tony going like, I'm going to sign you to bury you. He had no reason to do that. I don't know what he's doing, but that just seems like an odd choice to me. What do you think of this squash, and what do you think they're doing with the Inspiration?
I was very surprised by the squash. I think there is a story to tell because was it Grand Slam where the Brawling Birds made their debut?
Was it? I don't remember. It might have been.
If it was, I think you can lean into that and talk about how the Inspiration did his debut on Grand Slam and the Brawling Birds did. I think that this is a squash, but it's not over. I think this is going to be the feud that Brawling Birds has for a little bit. And I think the Inspiration will pick up a cheap win here, cheating or doing something that maybe new. So while it looks bad initially, I think we let it unfortunately play out, and I think they come and get a win back over the Brawling Birds. I don't think the Brawling Birds are going to keep running roughshod and going undefeated and squashing people right now. I think this is going to be the program they're in.
Yeah. Scott pointing out it was a 2-minute match. Scott, I agree, but they're a comedy tag team in a lot of senses. I mean, they've won belts and all, but the main form of who they are is comedic. Comedic teams are a lot harder to squash. I mean, not squash, bury, because by squashing them, sometimes they come out and use that to their advantage. You could be right. This could be the end. Then I won't understand any of it. I won't understand why they got signed. I won't understand why they were paid any money. There's absolutely no reason to pay them, bring them in to squash them, to bury them.
I will say that even if they were going to squash them like they did tonight, I would have liked if they would have gave them mic time, like coming out. Like usually they have the mic when they're walking to the ring and they're talking. I would have preferred that. So at least you have that part of the Inspiration.
Yeah, I mean, I it's all going to come down to their next thing. And I mean, not like their next shoot, literally the next thing they do. The next vignette, the next match, the next whatever they do. If they don't quickly turn this into something, then I'm like, what are we doing? You know, and they have enough. They can come out and say, hey, you didn't let us talk before we wrestled. You didn't let us finish our dancing before we wrestled. You attacked us from behind. Like they have all these excuses. Again, it just, how often did Harley get beat before she became a thing? But We'll see. It was weird. I'm not going to sit here and deny that it wasn't weird. And Scott and those in the chat who think they were buried in the sea have a very big chance of being right. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know better and I'm going to be right. You're going to be wrong. You guys have as much of a chance of being right as anyone. I mean, it definitely came out and got squashed, and it's weird, but we'll see. I don't know. Speaking of squash matches, Hangman had what, like a 10-second match against a guy named Marty Snow? Why? Why?
I don't know.
I think the whole purpose of this.
If I'm MJF, if I'm MJF, I had to wrestle Kevin Knight, right? Why wouldn't you like argue or try to get Hangman to someone that, like a name, you know? He should have wrestled someone from the Don Callis family. Like, he should have wrestled Archer or even, I don't know, Alexander, someone else from the Don Callis family.
Mm-hmm. I'll never, I don't mind a good squash. When it's to establish a new guy or to make someone look extremely dominant. But I don't get squashing, giving your two-time former champion in the middle of a championship feud a squash match. It just, and he's the babyface. None of that adds up. I guess it's the show he was pissed off, but like, you didn't need to do that. You're a Callis family would have made more sense. Like, or any, truthfully, even if it's not Callis family, give him someone who's been on the roster before.
Give him Rocky Romero.
Yeah, and let him beat them. It would be a little bit longer. It couldn't be a complete squash, but it would be something. LeRon Ford in chat saying that he had a feeling the inspiration were going to get squashed because the second swim match is usually a squash, which is 100% correct and sad that it's right. But I think he was surprised because they didn't give him any matches on TV before. So 100% right. And it is sad that this...
I think I'm more likely to mention Penico. I think that would have made more sense.
Yes, the Hangman match as Serpentico would have been much better now that you meant like something like that, or what, John Cruz, because everyone knows who that is. Like,
yeah, he already beat up John Cruz.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I like giving local indie guys time on TV and all. I'm not against that. I just, Hangman being the guy that gets squashed is like, what are you doing? Gets two squash, I should say. And then Laurent pointing out that the second woman's match is almost always squash is a sad but true fact. Mm-hmm. The post match is where you get the match made between Jet Speed Rodeo and the Don Callis family. Then we have a sit down face to face between FTR and the Young Bucks with Renee Paquette in the room, but they both signed an agreement not to hit each other. And they, you know, FTR's whole point is that, oh, hey, we, the Bucks, FTR and the Briscoes were considered the three best tag teams of the generation. And we beat the Briscoes in best two out of three. So if we beat you, we're the best of all time. It's a fun argument to put out there. I mean, there's no doubt that those three teams are among the three best of this generation. I'm sure there's some others that you got the New Day and you got other teams that could be thrown in there. Usos for some people, but if Nick and Matt Jackson are more pissed off for personal reasons because they attacked their family, they piled their brother, they pushed their mom. FTR has a good point. The family laid their hands on them first, which is true. Why did they do that? So then before FTR could leave, they said, hey, I know we have a no contact clause, but we didn't with this guy, and he punches Brandon Cutler, who was in the room filming BTE. This was an interesting style segment. What'd you think about it?
For me, how long the show was, I don't know if we needed it, and then I don't think we needed another FTR segment later on. But It was fine. It could have been saved for Collision or something else.
That's the only thing. It was a packed Dynamite. I don't know if it fit. We then get Hechicero versus John Moxley for, this was an eliminator match, if I'm not mistaken, for the belt, Continental. I will forever hate Hechicero for being a big guy who can do the grabs the way he can. He's a technical freak. So it was Hechicero's technical skills versus Moxley's more brawler style, which is always fun. Though Moxley does get into his technical side. Moxley can do some technical stuff, but he won with the Death Rider. Post-match, Takeshita comes out, and he and Moxley stare at each other. And before I go to your thoughts, I do want to point out that the chat is saying pieces in particular, and one LT pointing out that Renee has the best facial expressions. They are correct. What did you think of Hechicero versus John Moxley?
It was fun. I like the, it was very ground-based in this early on, which I like. I like a lot of the chain wrestling. But all these Mox matches lately kind of run together for me. They all kind of feel the same. I think commentary is really trying to talk about how, you know, the Callis family are using this as, you know, building more of a game plan against Mox and also wearing him down because Mox is wrestling every week. And I think that's going to, you know, come and pay off for them when he fights Takeshita at Revolution. I think all these matches that are going, you know, 17 minutes, 18 minutes, taking a toll on Mox. I think that's going to be his downfall.
Yeah. I'm with you on the Mox matches kind of blending together. They're trying to tell the Takeshita actually is in a very interesting spot because you got the Takeshita Mox rivalry and the Takeshita Okada rivalry. And I love that when a guy has two rivals and they're all intermingling stories. But Takeshita is a star, so I'm glad they're trying to give him as much time as possible. The Mox matches, though, yeah, they got to figure out something. Make him spice him up a little bit. We have Brody King walks to the ring, called out Swerve Strickland, saying, "Hey, I can stand on the desk and tell everybody how dangerous I am, but I don't need to say that because I am the most dangerous man in AEW, so why not come down here and prove it?" Which is funny because you just said you don't need to talk about how dangerous you are, and then you talked about how dangerous you are. Nana comes out and says, "All right, I'm going to bring Swerve out." And then, of course, Swerve attacks from behind. Is it that difficult for a wrestler to turn his head and look around a couple times? One or two times. Just to see if a guy's coming in behind you. Because everyone in that building knew what was happening. Everyone watching at home knew what was happening. But Brody King just stares forward. I thought they were going to do a really cool camera angle where they were going to have... Because they had like that weird camera and they were like looking up at Brody King. I thought you were gonna have Swerve just like kind of like pop up behind him. I thought that would look cool, but guess not.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Brody has been a heel before. He knows how it works. So I don't know why he got dumber as a babyface, but all I hope is that we get a dog collar match. I feel like that's what we're leaning into.
Will be dog collar or dog chain match?
Both.
Fair enough. Dumb baby face syndrome. I approve of that, Big G. Though I think you used your initials wrong. Bandido didn't make the save on that, I should point out, to help it out. And then we get an interview with the Death Riders, Garcia calling Don Cal's family dumb for picking fights they can't win. Then Yuta finally shows his shaved head, which isn't bald. It's got hair. Looks fine and normal. Says it was the worst day of his life. I think he should have like kept some of it long for a little while. Just until he could get a couple laughs out of it. But said it was the worst day of his life. Then Maria Shafir calls out Tony Storm. And then John Moxley calls out everyone, basically. We then move on to our Women's World Championship match, which I thought was going to be the main event, but ended up not being because they threw in that wasted trios match, which really sucks. This should have been the main event. To be perfectly honest, this had a lot more story behind it than the main event, because this story is not only between Thunder Rosa and Tekla, it's Tekla and Statlander. Like, there's a lot more behind there. This was fun. Tekla is a lot of fun to watch. She's really coming to her own. She's a good wrestler, has really good hard-hitting matches, and there's a lot of personality into it. She won with the blackout, retaining her championship. She took two stomps to get Thunder Rosa down and pinned, so it made Thunder Rosa look tough and a bit like a badass. After the match, Chris Statlander walked out, but the Sisters of Sin kept her from getting to Thunder Rosa. And Tekla hit a blackout on Rosa on the belt. I'm hoping they don't keep Rosa out long or at all, because, again, she's just been out for how long? But we'll see. But the match itself was a lot of fun. And Tekla says that the toxic era is now. So what do you think of this, this, to me, fun match?
It was a great pairing between the two. I think you have very two similar styles of people who are both somewhat smaller, but also hit like a hammer. So I thought their styles paired nicely together. Tekla, her presence is so much bigger than her physical size. Great. I think this is the best I've seen. I feel like this is the best I've seen Thunder Rosa wrestle on TV in a while. I felt like this felt more like the Thunder Rosa of old that we saw in the early years of AEW. And this point, I think the fact that it took two stops to finish her off is almost like a respectful thing after Tekla actually pulled her her shoulders off the mat after a two count. Coming back and having her win after two steps and then clean, I think that bodes well for Tekla.
Yeah, Tekla's a badass. Tekla is, she's looking like a real champ. And Miles, he's pointing out that Tekla and Clark Connors are dating, so they're a cool ass couple, and they are a cool ass couple. I'm gonna agree there. But yeah, she's a badass, and to me, my favorite thing is when they figure out characters, and they figured out her character's figured out. They know who she is. They know what makes her cool. They know what she can do. And I appreciate that. They're not trying anything that doesn't work at the moment. And truthfully, Statlander has really come into her own in a weird way in this feud. Is like more quiet, pissed off, which I think really suits her. So it works for the two of them.
I will say, remember when we talked last week about Statlander warning Thunder Rosa, like always be careful?
Yeah.
Nothing came out of it. Like, that's what one clean. The Sisters of Sin had no interference.
Well, I think the be careful is what, like, the after the match stuff. You know, she stomped her on the belt and stuff like that. Like, that she's willing to go out and hurt people. And that's what I think Statlander was kind of trying to point out. Like, hey, she's evil and she's willing to hurt you. I don't know if it came across well. That was always the weirdest. Weirdest way they went about it, I guess you'd say. Like, I never understood it, but that's what they did. So then I thought we were going to be going right into the main event, which we've already talked about, but we had, these are out of order, but I'm going to do them. We had a funny funny backstage moment with Orange Cassidy and Tony Storm, where Tony Storm burst in the room to check on Orange Cassidy and called him her little Clementine, which very much made me laugh. And she's going to be sticking up for Orange Cassidy, because if you're feuding with the Dogs, the Dogs are with the Death Riders, and the Death Riders have Marina Shafir. So they got there. They built the logic there. But the weirdest thing is right before the match, which again, we're at 10 o'clock at this point. We're not at,9:30 or something. Should be at the main event should be happening already. They really love to abuse this overrun, but we're about to go to the main event and they have Ciampa come out. I'm like, am I missing something? Is he in this match that I wasn't aware of? And he's saying that he wants his match. He wants to fight Fletcher again. He wants his belt back. He wants Sylvie back. And if he has to fight Mark Briscoe again to get it, he'll do it. So you think Mark Briscoe is coming out, but no, it's FTR for some reason. Now, FTR and obviously and Ciampa have a history from their days back in WWE, DIY versus, what were they called in WWE? The Revival. Is that DIY versus The Revival? So they have a huge history. Well, Dax just hugs Ciampa, and Ciampa looks uncomfortable. Now, Ciampa also looks crazy. I mean, he's got that, like, psycho look down. Great. And he wanted to welcome an old friend to AEW, and he would love for Ciampa to join them. And then Ciampa goes, well, I hated you 10 years ago, and I hate you now. And then he's like, shush Stokely, and Hardwick gets mad, says, you don't talk to Big Stoke. And then they kind of get in their faces, and Ciampa says, well, I know you had some no contact clause with the Bucks, but you don't with me. And he like chops him. It was supposed to be, I don't think it was a full punch. It was like a chop to like the neck. I think it was supposed to sell with a jaw. And you think you're going to have your fight between FTR and Ciampa, but Hardwood says, no, I'm not mad. And they walk away. I don't know what this was about to you.
You're going to get Dax versus Ciampa on Collision.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Thank you. I forgot about that.
But I don't know where this goes beyond, though, because FCR had their match with the Bucks and all that stuff, so I don't know where Ciampa fits in.
Yeah, it was a weird move to be like, here, you come in and join us. Not join us, but we're going to make this bring you into our conversation. I don't know. But that is we covered the main event already. So that is Dynamite tonight. It was okay. If I were to, it went between a 2 and a 3 on the fun scale. It should have been awesome, but they had enough negatives on it that I'm like, especially they had been on such a heater, and to come down from that, it just, I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird. The outcome, and then the fact that it went so long, so many segments that probably could have been moved elsewhere. Made it kind of not flow very well for me.
Yeah, exactly. Scott didn't like it. I know LaRon didn't like it. I don't know how everyone else felt, but yeah, it was an average show at best. Scott called it awful. I don't know if it was awful, but.
And you think it should have been better when you say, oh, 3 championship matches on 1 Dynamite. It should be awesome, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Pieces clearly felt like the first hour was better than the second. I can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. 1LT saying the matches always cook. They do. That is, AEW can always at least rely on the wrestling. But yeah, we're the best wrestle. So Joe, when you are not here, where can you be found?
Well, like I won't be here next week. So, but you can still find me on social media @_AsianJoe. I am still looking for cereal to review because I haven't done one in a while. I keep looking in the cereal aisle and I haven't found anything that seems interesting enough. So if you have a recommendation, feel free to send it my way. And Ryan, I saw that there's a new hit here for history. YouTube.
There is. Now, before we get to that, have you ever tried the cereal called Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Oh, no. I've crossed legs. Is it similar?
It's no. It's not even close.
Does it snap, crackle, and or pop?
It does not do any of those things.
No, I have not.
Oh, you should try that cereal called Cinnamon Toast Crunch. But when I'm not here, you can follow me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod, or you can follow my history YouTube and blog at hereforhistory.com or Here for History on YouTube or at underscore Here for History, depending on where you are. It's Here for History. Just find that. I will probably be adding stuff to the blog at some point, writing the written versions of the new YouTubes I put out. I think that's what I decided I want to do. But I did have a new one out on Friday. It's the longest one I've done yet. It's 50 minutes. So if you have some time, but it's very interesting on the Sacco and Vanzetti trial. It's also relevant to today because it's about immigration and whatnot. So you should give it a check it out. I won't have a new one out this week. I decided to give myself a break this week. I had to do some stuff for late for work, and it just ate up all my time. But that's about it. Now with that, I'm going to thank the chat. 1LT Pieces, Scott, Big G, Mike Peterson, Jesse Ozog, Laron, and anyone, Taylor Cannon, Lord Kev. Thank you guys for checking, coming out and being part. Before I leave, Pieces wants to know what I thought of the New Japan show. It was incredible. It's an awesome show. That was a lot of fun. And some of the hardest chops I've ever seen in my life in multiple matches. I don't know why they do that to each other. But with that, I'm going to go find the outro overlay and hit outro.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast.